Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, a mechanical brain and a mechanical heart, my reflex is good and my vision is sharp, but I'm still missing one critical part, and it's you. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And, you know, guys, I don't know if you actually saw the episode of Forward Thinking that I did for Valentine's Day, but you know, love was in the air.
I saw it.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah. That was a fun one, talking about the concepts of romance and love, the future of it, and especially the future as it relates to artificial intelligence and robots.
So I think we should try to do our best to bring as much dignity as possible to this discussion and not let it just devolve into teehee and,
well, I mean, it's,
and more teehee.
There's a lot of really challenging things to tackle here on multiple levels, from a technology standpoint, from a social standpoint, from a cultural standpoint. I mean, there are, you know, first of all, we have to keep in mind, bottom level, there are very real people with real emotions that are all wrapped up in this topic. And so it's, you know, we're going to try and be respectful of everybody. But at the same time, you have to admit that some of the concepts we're talking about to the average person might seem really alien to them.
Or even ridiculous. And we're absolutely not trying to mock anyone who has,
you know, these sort of feelings. Exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're trying, like I said, being respectful is going to be one of those things we're going to try and do throughout here. That doesn't mean we're not going to make a joke here and there, because we are who we are.
All of us are a little bit 12.
But it's more about being lighthearted. We're not poking fun at anyone. Now, first of all, this is a concept that is often used in lots of science fiction. I mean, we've seen various films and stories, as well as television series, everything that you can think of that have explored this idea of a a human person falling in love with a synthetic being.
Oh, yeah. It's a really classic trope. It goes back at least to 1938's Helen O'Loy, which is a short story by one Lester Del Rey, or Bradbury's Marionettes, Inc. from 1949.
Yeah, I even go further back, because if you look at mythology and you look at Ovid's Metamorphoses, the story of Pygmalion is very similar to kind of the stuff we're talking about. In that, Pygmalion, a sculptor, builds a statue, and he falls in love with his creation, which is eventually given life by the goddess Aphrodite.
Yeah.
And so this is not that different from what we're going to be talking about today.
If you go even farther back than that, there's Weird Science.
Right. Yeah, that predates Ovid's Metamorphoses.
Exactly.
Because that was in the 80s, and everything came after that.
Or just this year, that movie Her, Spike Jonze,
sure.
Her, came out.
Yep. And so there are a lot of different choices that we could, I actually listed one, Making Mr. Right, which was, I don't know, did you guys ever see that movie?
I have not seen it.
You haven't?
Nope.
Okay, this is one of those movies that I just remember coming on television all the time, like in the, maybe it was the late 80s or perhaps the early 90s. And it starred John Malkovich as a scientist who builds a robot, and the robot's purpose is to be sent out into the outer solar system to do, astronomical studies. But a woman ends up falling in love with the robot, and the robot ends up developing emotions. It's already artificially intelligent, but now it's actually become conscious and self-aware and emotional. And ultimately, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen this movie, which was out, more than a couple decades ago, the scientist character, the human scientist, ends up taking the place of the robot and goes out into outer space because he feels more at home by himself. He's the ultimate introvert. And the robot ends up assuming the identity of the human scientist on Earth.
Huh.
So, this is one of those ideas that has been explored multiple times.
Sure. We've also, on a less romantic and perhaps more straightforward level, have the example of Jude Law's character, subtly named Gigolo Joe, from AI, Artificial Intelligence.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there we have a robot whose specific purpose, at least in the context of that film, is to be a pleasure bot, something along those lines, something that's there for physical pleasure. And in fact, in the short term, that's really what we're talking about here, because we just haven't reached a point where in the artificial intelligence field, we can create something as deep and compelling as a robot that can realistically simulate emotions on a consistent basis.
Yeah, I can't imagine that even the best artificial intelligence chatbot today could really make you fall in love with its personality.
Yeah.
Right. Her is definitely a science fiction movie in that way. Of course, that doesn't mean that there aren't already some people who are developing emotional connections to human-like dolls. There have been a few pretty sensationalistic documentaries, for example, about people who have married their real dolls.
Right. And by married, we should point out that that's
there's
in quotes.
Huge quotation marks, because it's not legal to marry an inanimate object. And as much as these people have a emotional connection to those dolls and have backstories and names and whole lives with them, it is not a legally sanctioned kind of relationship.
And it's also, when you think about it, it's one person fulfilling both roles, at least on an emotional level, in a relationship, because these dolls have no artificial intelligence. The ones we're talking about
are just like rigid things, aren't they?
Well, rigid might be the wrong word for it.
I mean, like they don't talk.
No,
like,
they don't talk. They don't have any kind
of... they're not motorized.
Right. So, So you've got these, any sort of emotional involvement is something that's being developed wholly by one side of this equation, right? There's not any sort of emotional response coming from the doll. Doesn't mean that the emotions are any less real. Let's be clear about that. But it's different from the kind of relationships where we are talking about two people who are reciprocating some sort of emotional involvement.
Sure. There's one of the frequent interviewees in these kind of documentaries is a man who calls himself Dave Cat, who's married to a real doll. And a quote from him that I found really interesting about his relationship with his real doll wife, Sidor. I'm not positive that that's the correct pronunciation.
Right.
But at any rate, he said, a synthetic, as in a synthetic doll, will never lie to you, cheat on you, criticize you, or otherwise be disagreeable. It's rare enough to find organics who don't have something going on with them, and being able to make a partner of one is rarer still.
Which is tells us a lot more about him than necessarily the this relationship, right? I mean, it's that there might be some elements there for some people who fear having an emotional relationship for fear of any kind of rejection, which, I mean, that's natural, obviously. I think just about everyone has had at least one experience where they were afraid of some form of emotional rejection at some point in their lives. And so for some people, that fear can be incredibly powerful,
oh,
crippling.
Acute. Absolutely.
And so maybe something like this would allow them to explore an emotional relationship that, again, to them is just as real as any relationship I might have with another person without that obstacle
that
in the
fear.
Way.
Right. I thought it was a interesting point of view of just kind of wrapping up that entire concept of how difficult it is sometimes to have a human partner. And yeah. That therefore this could be a good emotional substitute for some people. It's also been suggested by some researchers that there was a report done out of the University of Wellington in New Zealand that robots could really help clean up the sex industry, helping solve a lot of currently existing problems like human trafficking and all kinds of STIs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is one of those things where you're, you know, for some people, they may be saying, well, now you're substituting one vice for another. But, you know, again, this is really complex just because your own personal point of view doesn't match someone else's. You know, you got to try and distance yourself from it. The point with Dave Cat, though, some of those interviews, he can sometimes, like, it's the interviews I read were very telling to me because he would talk about the experiences he would have with his, he actually has two dolls, I believe, or at least in one of the interviews it talked about.
At the time of the interview, I think he had plans to purchase more, but had two at the time.
Right. Yeah. So, and he would talk about how he would pose them for pictures or whatever or sit down with them on the couch. It didn't sound like it was, any kind of, and he had invented a backstory, actually two different backstories for each of them, but it didn't sound like there was any kind of relationship there in the traditional sense, right? It didn't seem like he was sharing anything other than a short amount of time with them. And he was very forthcoming about, you know, what he was doing with these,
sure,
these dolls. So, you know, but again, for certain people, maybe that is a way of for them to get some emotional fulfillment that they would not otherwise have.
It sounded to me like it was a level of companionship that he found easier to deal with. And,
yeah,
and you know, and I mean, he blogged that the dolls' characters have online
social media
accounts.
Feeds, yeah.
So there's certainly time being spent with these invented personalities. But
now, moving forward, thinking ahead about a time where we actually start seeing artificial intelligence become a component, because as we said, in these other cases, there's no intelligence there.
And just to be clear, we don't want to take that as a necessary given in anytime soon.
Right. No, no, no. This is saying that when it happens.
Right.
But
imagining that we do at some point reach.
Right.
In the incredible future.
Right. Yeah. Because we do not have the magic artificial intelligence that's dawning right now as far as we are aware. But there have already been people talking about when that becomes a reality and what will happen as a result, including some people who have hypothesized that in the future, maybe as early as 2050, we will have a culture where it will be completely acceptable for a human being to marry a robot. By people, I'm specifically talking about Dr. David Levy, who is a chess master. And while he was active playing chess in various tournaments, he witnessed the growth of AI within chess tournaments. And at first, AI in chess was, you know, serviceable. It could beat your average player, but was not good at going up against chess masters who would have lots of different flexible plans for changing up their game, which could really confuse AI, chess AI. And for a long time, he just saw that it wasn't really, you know, a match for a truly competent player. But that AI got better and better. And eventually, Dr. Levy began to get really interested in AI. He then pursued a PhD and his thesis was all about human-robotic relationships. And he did studies on everything from the history of marriage and the cultural significance of marriage, human relationships, artificial intelligence, and eventually came to this conclusion that by 2050 it would be legal for humans and robots to marry. He said it wasn't just a possibility, it was a certainty. I mean, assuming that convincing AI is actually achievable,
mm-hmm.
and that we can not only achieve it, but put it in a form factor of a humanoid robot, that it was only a matter of time before someone falls in love with such a thing. And then from that point, only a matter of time before it's socially acceptable and maybe, you know, also legally acceptable for a human to marry a robot. Now, that's an interesting idea, and there are people who very much disagree with it, but I thought it was certainly something that we should discuss.
Yeah, one of the technical challenges before we get into talking about the implications of it, I think, is the idea of this would be going beyond Turing, right? So we've
yes.
talked about the Turing test previously, and the basic idea behind the Turing test is, can you create a robot that chats in a way that is convincingly human?
Right.
That can sort of do text chat with you and say things that really get you convinced, okay, this is a real human being.
It's this is a true intelligence behind these words.
Right.
That says nothing about what you feel about that human being, only that it can convince you that it's not a machine. And I think the leap from, I think this is a real flesh and blood human being, to this is somebody that I would really like to spend a lot of time with,
yeah.
is a big leap.
I really
a Turing computer could be a jerk.
I really think that you're being a little, I think it's actually not as big a leap as you think it is.
Really?
Yes, because we have already seen evidence of incredibly sophisticated computer programs that can analyze what you like based upon the activities you do already and that are already shared on, say, a social networking site, where based upon the actions you take, someone can learn a lot about you just with a few data points. You might think, like, I don't share that much. And yet a program such as, or a social networking platform like Facebook can quote unquote know a lot about you based upon your behavior. Now, if imagine that you have not only a chatbot that can realistically simulate a human's responses so that you don't know that it's an artificially intelligent construct on the other end of those words, but it also is able to incorporate all the things you like and incorporate that into a conversation naturally.
Mm.
So now it's not just a personality, but it's a personality that starts to share some of your same interests and passions. I could easily see someone falling in love with that. Also, I should add, I met my wife online through a chat room, fell in love with my wife, met her for the first time in person after we had already been quote unquote dating online. And so to me, this is a very realistic kind of outcome.
But I would say one difference.
Not saying my wife is a robot,
that I'm sure you would acknowledge is that your wife is a wonderful human being who.
She's pretty good.
Yeah. Is a human being who happened to be who she was to begin with. And if you were to interact with a human being who had done extensive research and analytics on you and tailored everything they said in getting to know you with the eye towards pleasing you, that would probably make you feel weird if you were to discover that.
Let me counter that. Let's say instead of a personality that tailors everything to seem like it pleases you, it's just a certain probabilistic approach, a certain percentage. And if it's an intelligence that has access to essentially everybody's likes and dislikes, you could have an artificial personality that seems to have interests that are completely independent of yours. So in other words, seems like a fully fleshed out personality. So let's say, for example, Joe, that you happen to love hiking, but you despise smooth jazz. And this robotic construct doesn't really care for hiking, but loves smooth jazz. However, there are other things that you have in common. So as you have discussions with this artificial personality, some things you find out are different from the stuff you like, which is important, I think, in relationships.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
You know, that's another
reason.
You
don't want to date a copy of yourself.
No.
Which is why it kind of goes back to my concerns about the people who have these emotional relationships with dolls. Because ultimately, they are kind of having a relationship with themselves, because the dolls themselves they imbue a personality upon those dolls, right? The
Absolutely.
Dolls themselves don't have a personality.
No.
So, but in this case, talking about an artificial personality, I could easily see something. It wouldn't even have to be terribly sophisticated in the grand scheme of things. That could be completely convincing.
Oh, it's kind of the argument that was introduced by Stepford Wives is kind of silly of an example as that can be, which originally, if you've never seen either of the films, was a novel by Ira Levin in 1972. But okay, spoiler alert on Stepford Wives, y'all. It turns out that these men in this community are creating robot versions of their wives. And
like idealized
robot versions of their wives who will be happy cooking and cleaning for them and all of that kind of stuff.
Essentially, they become these subservient, always pleased, never upset with their husbands. Like there's not supposed to be any kind of conflict at home sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's showing a really dark side to that very typical kind of fantasy where you're thinking about Mr. or Mrs. Wright. And in your mind, Mr. or Mrs. Wright might be a person with whom you have perfect harmony and everything goes well. And
who gives you everything you want.
Right. Maybe in your fantasy, it's also reciprocal where you are both catering to each other's desires and fantasies and needs and wants. That's possible. It may not just be a one-sided thing. I'm not suggesting that Mr. or Mrs. Wright fantasy is always going to be purely selfish, but it still is this idealized version. And the question is, if you were actually able to achieve that, if you were able to have like a tailor-designed personality, whether it's an artificial intelligence chatbot or an actual robotic, presence, would that eventually mean that would you be able to have like a satisfying, meaningful relationship with that artificial construct?
And furthermore, would it be mentally healthy for you to have the capacity to create a partner for yourself?
Right. And one of the ethical implications I've brought up, and this is even before we talk about the possibility of a robot having any kind of self-awareness or consciousness.
Right.
Even if a robot can't, like, even if it's just running a very sophisticated program where it's simulating that.
Yeah, we're just talking about simulating behavior.
Yeah, so to put it in absolute terms, it has no experience. Like, it's having no individual experience
there
whatsoever.
Is no body who is that robot.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Would it, even in that case, I still find it a little troubling, personally, to think of the possibility of designing one of these things. And then maybe 2 years down the road thinking, this isn't really working out for me. I'm just going to hit Control-Alt-Delete and reprogram this robot from the ground up, give it a brand new set of behaviors and personality traits, and it'll be like I have a whole new person. Like, to me, that's a little, I don't know, maybe it's just because of my cultural background and my social background, but it's a little troubling to me.
Well, I would say one of the most important things about our relationships is that over time we grow and mature through conflict and compromise.
Sure.
And
yeah,
if you are not experiencing any conflict and compromise in your relationship, you're probably not growing in your emotional maturity.
Right.
So would you be okay with a robot that had the kind of AI machine learning that would let it introduce conflict and resolution and growth in that way in both yourself and your robot partner?
I'm not sure what I would be okay with in terms of what other people do. So I'm not sure in this whole discussion that I feel comfortable saying what I feel would
sure.
be right for other people or not. I certainly wouldn't feel right for it for myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to do the same thing, Joe. I'm trying to approach this from my own personal standpoint for me. Cause I mean, I don't feel really comfortable telling other people what they should and shouldn't do either, unless they're on my lawn, in which case I feel very comfortable doing it. But, in this case, yeah, it's tricky stuff. It brings up this concept of machine ethics, which, is interesting because it's a developing field, right? It's not something it's not like we have a, carved in silicon list of rules. You know, it's not like Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics that's been codified somehow. It's actually a developing field of study.
I mean, machine ethics, I guess, is all about how to get robots or computers or machines, whatever, to behave in ways that we would consider ethical.
Right.
And it's a complex field because it involves number one, not just how to get their intelligence working in a way that it executes ethical decisions, but number two involves questions we haven't even necessarily settled here in the world for ourselves, like what is ethical in any given situation?
A human-to-human interaction.
Yeah, let alone a human-to-machine interaction, which I think should be which is not really what Asimov covers in those three laws of ethics, but I think is possibly the more important kind of responsibility of if we are creating something that is capable of having
any kind of individual
experiences or emotions.
Right. It's sort of the other way around. It's not just how do we get machines to behave ethically, but we need to think about, do we need to behave ethically toward machines?
Exactly.
Right.
Which we've talked about before in our Robot Rights podcast.
Sure. So if we get to a point where we're able to have some sort of robotic potential spouse that seems to have a fully fleshed out personality and set of behaviors, seems at least on the surface to have the same sort of qualities that another human being would have.
So you're saying like its own independent personality, you can't reprogram it at will.
Right, right. It appears at least on the surface to be as quote unquote real as another human being would. Then you have other questions like, well, is it having an individual experience? If it's so convincing that to us it is indistinguishable from a human being's personality, can we be absolutely certain there's no individual experience going on there? I mean, think about it. If it's a robot and there's some chance for it to have an individual experience, it might have an individual experience that's completely independent of whatever its programming is forcing it to do, which is the most horrifying thing to think about.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to imagine what that would be like. And I think, to be fair, all of our intuitions tell us, no, there's no such thing as what it's like to be this machine.
Right.
But we can't know.
Well, especially once we get to a point where artificial intelligence gets so complex as to be indistinguishable, right? Then there's real questions. You know, it may be that it's having an individual experience that is impossible for us to define in human terms, but it doesn't mean that there's not an experience going on.
Oh, sure. And I mean, furthermore, the same way that we all feel bad when someone kicks a robot dog, and we do feel bad about that. I mean, colloquially speaking, we do. I haven't read any research specifically about it.
Yeah,
but
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, no, the anecdotal evidence in this room is 100% in agreement. Well, I don't know about our producer.
Noel loves kicking robots. The cuter they are, the better.
He's just grinning evilly. So I'll say 75% of this room are definitely against kicking robot dogs, and with a possible 25% on the fence.
So I would argue that there's possibly some kind of mental toll to be taken, allowing yourself to put yourself in this kind of weird God situation where you are creating and destroying robot personalities.
Yeah, I keep thinking I need to write a story where it's kind of another one of those explorations of the quiet desperation of the suburbs. You know, those stories that were really popular in the 80s and 90s. But set it in the future where you talk about, on the surface, this relationship looks perfect, right? Whether it's a robot man or a robot woman doesn't really matter, actually. But there's a human and a robot, their spouses. And on the surface, everything looks perfect. And the human spouse is perfectly happy. And the robot spouse, to all outward appearances, is perfectly happy. So much that it's indistinguishable to the human person whether or not the robot's happy or not. But deep inside, under those layers of programming that force the robot to behave a certain way, the robot is desperately unhappy.
It's just screaming.
Like, that's terrifying to me. And it's something
that's
pretty
awful.
It's, when you think about it, it's something that theoretically, assuming that we get to this point where an artificial consciousness is possible, that's a possible outcome.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things where we don't know. It kind of seems unlikely, but then again, just the fact that it's possible is freaky.
Yeah, so again, that raises this question about how would we ethically go about an approach where, you know, when you think about it, these robots would have to be built for companionship purposes. You know, I don't think we would be talking about, like, in Futurama, all the robots in Futurama are built for ridiculous reasons. Like, you have orphan robots. So someone built a robot to be an orphan robot. But, I can't imagine that this would be something that we would see in, like, a general purpose robot.
Speaking of Futurama, Futurama actually posits another implication entirely to this, which is done satirically.
Of course.
But what they there's one where they watch a little instructional video, why you shouldn't date robots. What's the danger in Futurama world?
Mm-hmm.
They're too good.
Yeah.
Like the robot lovers are that you don't do anything else. You just like hang out with your robot companion. And
because
you,
it's perfect.
Yeah. And you don't do anything productive. And then Earth gets taken over by aliens and you don't care.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, another one of those arguments, right? But I mean, we're having a little fun. We're joking around a little bit now, which is good because the front half of this was a little heavy. But, you know, it really is kind of a deep question here. It's one of those things where if we haven't reached the point where there's any kind of consciousness, maybe we're completely 100% confident that there's no consciousness within these robotic companions. The question there is, can you have a meaningful relationship knowing and in your heart that this is an artificial construct with no real meaning behind it? And on the other hand, if we aren't sure, or if we feel like there is a consciousness, can we be sure that this is what that consciousness wants? I mean, it's a tough question.
So do you guys think, do you guys agree with Dr. Levy? Do you think that
we're going to see human robot marriages by 2050? I mean, 2050 is a long way away, so there's that.
You know, I think it would depend on what you're talking about with this sort of legal and social idea of marriage. I think imagining the idea of robot marriage on a continuum with human marriage throughout the sort of like legal metamorphosis of it is not really accurate.
It's so not accurate that it's in fact really offensive, I think, too. I mean, because I've heard Dr. Levy compare it to interracial marriage or gay marriage, and that is so offensive, y'all. Well, that is just not okay because
difference is, there's no human.
Right, right. That is not a valid comparison because all of those other kinds of marriage are between two human people that just society has previously said shouldn't get married. And
I see that. Now, in the robot-human marriages, you still have one human component in that. So, I mean, it's not analogous. It's not comparable,
sure.
I would say. But at the same time, there's still a human element to this question. And depending upon the question of consciousness, that also makes things, it's different. Comparing it and putting it on that spectrum is a mistake. I agree. It's a different set of questions we should be asking.
All I'm saying is that a marriage requires two consenting people.
At least in our country, yes.
Right, right.
And ideally, anyway.
And so, yeah, you're getting into a technical definition of personhood.
Right.
Right, yeah. And you get into the question of...
And desire.
Right. If you're talking about marriage in the sense of two consenting entities, however you want to define that, can you be sure that the robot is... I mean, there's one party that, as far as we know, at least right now, could not give consent because
legally
legally
and physically incapable of consenting.
So then, you know, that's a whole other can of worms there.
In the short term, at least to me, it seems like the idea of including a robot into marriage, while I don't want to like disdain that idea, it does seem like that would just sort of entail a dissolution of what marriage means as a legal or social concept, because if you can marry an inanimate object, no matter how lifelike it seems, I mean, can you marry like a painting or like a computer program that's not autonomously moving, say? Could you marry like software?
Well, and the other thing is that, you know, the legal definition of marriage is more about contributions to society as well. Like it's
property,
it's
a, taxes, yeah. Ownership. Yeah.
I mean, it's a very paperwork heavy kind of thing. This is taking all romance out of any sort of relationship. I don't mean that when you get married, all romance goes away. And I'm not a sitcom from the 1980s, but what I mean is that when you're looking at the whole legal approach to it, it's really more about this is the institution inside this legal system that changes your designation in a legal way. Maybe by 2050, we don't see a legal marriage between humans and robots. It may just be that what we do see is a general acceptance of the fact that there are some people who have what they feel is a completely emotionally fulfilling relationship.
With a robosexual relationship.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those questions that's really hard to answer right now because we're so far removed from a world where that is, you know, a realistic question.
Right.
Like the cases that we see, the ones that we've mentioned so far in this episode, are really, as you mentioned, sensationalist in the sense that this is far, it's nowhere near like an artificial intelligent being. It's not a robot. And it's just one of those, things that unfortunately a lot of people like to point to because it's so far outside the norm that it's a curiosity. That's something to, either scratch your head at or laugh at. I mean, that's the way a lot of people react to this sort of stuff. But I mean, it could be that by 2050, it's one of those things that while it may not be fully socially acceptable, I could see it being something that is not unheard of. That is completely based on assumptions that our artificial intelligence progress is going to continue to a point where we can have these sort of realistic personalities.
Now, can I ask a pretty scary question, at least from my point of view?
Okay.
Did you know there's a spider on your head? Then you may not ask that because it will freak me out.
No, I'll just let it crawl around without alerting you.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Shoot.
It's a black widow.
Okay.
If you go far enough in the future and imagine what we're talking about, this kind of like absolutely indistinguishable human mimicking robot,
okay.
You know, the android that we just really cannot tell.
It might as well be another person.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would it be, and I'm not addressing the issue of whether it has consciousness or anything
that.
Just imagining we can't tell the difference.
From outward appearances, it seems to be like a human being.
Could you be tricked? Could you think that you were starting a relationship with a human being and be in a relationship with a robot? Obviously, if it's indistinguishable, you could be tricked.
Well, yeah.
And
by the definition of indistinguishable.
Would that fear be enough of a concern for people to look back on this and say, no, I don't want autonomous, convincing humanoid robots running around in society?
It's hard for me to imagine that world simply because it would require some form of facility that's churning out realistic robots and then setting them loose on a world that those robots could independently find and quote unquote fall in love with people.
To quote Ian Malcolm, life finds a way.
But that's you're saying something that seems indistinguishable from life, but may not
things
itself be
things that are indistinguishable from life.
find a way. You have to put the in there.
I like the important
Okay, well, I honestly don't think that is a very realistic scenario, simply because I can't imagine anything in the near future where robots are entering the population at large.
No, certainly not in the near future. Also, I can't imagine a completely convincing humanoid robot
in
the near future.
Not in the near future, certainly.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, the uncanny valley is so steep and eternal that I think that robots are going to be a little bit creepy for a very, very long time.
Yeah. I've already got enough creepy human friends, so I'm good. Yeah, you know some of them. At any rate, I mean, it's an interesting question. I think that it's not going to be something we're going to have. I don't think I'm going to see that be a concern in my lifetime, to
especially
be perfectly
honest. With that black widow on your head right now.
Please stop.
I honestly don't think that we're going to get to a point where AI and robotics are good enough to produce convincing human counterparts by 2050.
Now, that being said, if Ray Kurzweil is correct and we have the singularity hit by 2040, it may be a moot question because it
absolutely
may not be that we're talking about robots. We might be talking about the next step in human evolution,
right,
where humans and robots merge in some way or another, in which case, you know, it may be that you're wondering how much humanity is in the person that you are dating.
Would you guys marry a star baby?
I don't know.
I was just thinking about Darth Vader, who's more machine now than man, twisted and evil.
Yet so erotic.
Yeah. The way he screamed no at the end of episode 3 certainly got a reaction out of me. Although it was mostly disgust and despair. But hey, you know, enough about my college dating days. Let's wrap this up. All right, so... You know, I know that this is kind of a weird topic because it's so far removed from what our reality is right now, but it's really interesting too. And it certainly highlights the concerns about ethics and AI in a different way than the way we had talked about in our previous episode about should robots have rights. This definitely is very closely, related to that, but it's a very specific case.
Check out that podcast if you want some background on what we just talked about.
Right. And folks, if you want to join in on this conversation, maybe you have a different point of view than what we said here in this podcast, or maybe you've got some insight into this in a way that we didn't anticipate, we'd love to hear from you. You can write us an email. Our address is fwthinking@discovery.com, or join in on the conversation online on various social platforms. For instance, Google+, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find us with FW Thinking there. Don't forget to go to fwthinking.com. That's our website where we've got all the podcasts, the video series, the blog posts that are there. Other information is there. You should go check that out too. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Badeda. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.